Hello, everyone. Happy Sabbath. Good to see you all. Welcome to everyone on the webcast. Pleasure being with you. As many of you know, we're rapidly approaching D-Day. The due date is right around the corner, so I may see you again. I may not. We'll see. I'd like to begin by sharing with you a few pictures. Three to be exact. So if the sound crew could kindly put the pictures up there. We'll have to work around rotating it a little bit. This first individual that I'm putting up on the screen is the 2019 and 2020 Olympia Classic Physique Division champion. The Olympia is considered the pinnacle of bodybuilding in the sport. This is Mr. Chris Bumstead. Chris is 26 years old. He hails from Ottawa, Canada. He's 6'2". He's getting ready in this picture to compete in the Olympia, which is in a few weeks, at least when this picture was taken. Weighs about 232 pounds, sub 5% body fat. As you can see, he is a very in-shape individual. He has spent his time building his body through nutrition, through sport, through mindset. It's one of the things that has made him so successful in the sport. Now, the next picture. The next individual. This is a seven-time bodybuilding Olympia champion in the open division. The open division is different than the classic division, whereas the classic has a weight cap, focuses on aesthetics. The open division focuses on muscle size and definition. This is Ronnie Coleman. Ronnie, in this picture, is about 300 pounds of pure muscle. He's a juggernaut of a human being. He, just to give some statistics about Ronnie's size, 300 pounds and sub 5% body fat, if you were to take a measurement of his chest, 58 inches in circumference, if you were to measure from the inside of the chest all the way around, huge, 24-inch sized arms. Each leg is 36 inches thick. 36 inches. So he's got these massive tree trunk legs, these massive arms, this massive chest, and a 36-inch sized waist. Absolutely dedicated to his sport. Pure professional. The only thing that stopped him from competing was he was doing a barbell squat. He was doing about 800 pounds at the time, and he broke his hip. On the first repetition, he did two reps at 800 pounds. In many of the interviews, he says his only regret was he didn't go for three. The next individual, which we'll put up there, is not a bodybuilder of any renown. In fact, we won't dwell on the picture very long. This is an individual named Romario Dos Santos Alves. If you will notice from the picture, something seems a little bit off about his physique. Unlike Chris, or unlike Ronnie, he tried taking a massive shortcut to getting the physique he wanted. He injected a synthetic oil into his arms called Synthol, and you can see it in his traps too, to try to shortcut the process. Doesn't quite look as nice, does it? We won't dwell on this picture. We can turn the pictures off. And I'll get to why we showed the last picture in a moment. Now, this isn't a sermon about the sport of bodybuilding. I think that would be a pretty odd topic, talk about bodybuilding in a sermon. But I do want to use it as some background or subcontext for the questions that I have to ask you. Two questions that I want us to think about over the course of the sermon. Question number one. How strong is your faith? How strong is your faith? You look at individuals like Ronnie Coleman and Chris Bumstead. They're definitely very strong individuals. They've dedicated their lives towards growing their muscles. But we have higher things to think about, don't we? How strong is your faith? Which brings us to the second follow-up question. And are you growing faith as if it were a spiritual muscle? How strong is your faith? First question. Question number two. And are you growing faith as if it were a spiritual muscle? Faith is an absolute integral component to Christianity, isn't it? It's foundational. We know the definition. Faith is the assurance of things hoped for, conviction of things not seen. You cannot be a Christian if you fail to fundamentally believe that Christ is who he says he is and forever will be. It's fundamental. In fact, Hebrews makes that point. It says, without faith it is impossible to please God, because anyone who comes to him must believe that he exists. But moreover, that he rewards those who earnestly seek him. There's an and in there. Faith is an absolute necessity of spiritual being. It's an integral component. It is not static. It is something that we have, something that we develop, something that we grow. If we don't, if we have a dearth of faith, our ability to withstand trials and to hold fast is what? Greatly diminished. Which is why it's so important that we take stock of it on occasion to see whether or not we are feeding it properly, that we know where our strengths and our weaknesses are. Because you cannot synthetically inject faith into the Christian musculature. Here's the reason why I showed that third picture. There are no shortcuts to developing faith. It has to be something that we are dedicated to. And that's what we're going to focus on in this first split sermon today. Faith. How strong is your faith, and are you growing it as if it were a spiritual muscle? Turn over to Matthew 14, and we will pick up in a story in verse 22. Matthew 14, story in verse 22. It's a familiar story. It takes place right after the feeding of the 5,000. Matthew 14, I'll give you a second to turn there. The apostle writes the following for the church's benefit on Christ's behalf. Remember, this was recorded for our benefit. Matthew 14, verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, referring to the Sea of Galilee, while he sent the multitudes away. When he had sent the multitudes away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Pause for a moment. Remember, out of the 12 disciples, several of them were experienced fishermen. Andrew, James, Peter, Nathaniel, Thomas, John, and at least two others that weren't named. These were individuals that were used to being out on this ocean, well, very large lake, operating within it, dealing with the storms that were so frequently common to it. Sea of Galilee was known for sudden storms such as this. So this must have been a doozy, absolute doozy, because they were still out there struggling in the middle of the night with it. Continuing on. Now in the fourth watch of the night, this is somewhere between 3 to 6 a.m., Jesus went to them walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out in fear. Imagine that situation. You have been a fisherman for the majority of your life. I doubt you have ever seen an individual walking to you out on water. Very understandable response to cry out in fear. Very understandable response. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer. It is I. Do not be afraid." I love this verse. I don't know about you, or at least maybe for some of us, I enjoy gaining jump scares out of my children and wife. I got Melody. I got Khalees this morning. I chuckled. Khalees went, "Ah!" And Christ said this with a straight face. And he had all of them in that boat. "Be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him and said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. When he saw the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand and caught him and said, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And then he got in the boat. The wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshipped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Notice what Christ here said specifically. Not ye of no faith, not ye weakling, no, ye of little faith. Had you just held on and believed, imagine you could have walked out to me out on this boat if your strength had just been a little bit more. Now, Peter obviously took the steps out of the boat. None of the other disciples did. Did that mean they didn't have any faith? Was he just addressing Peter? He was addressing all of them. But we do know from the gospel accounts that the majority of them, we don't have, for example, information on all of them and how they're first introduced. Like, for example, Judas Iscariot. He just sort of appears within the story. But some of them, we get statements of faith right out of the gate, don't we? Absolutely amazing statements of faith. You take Nathan, for example. I'm looking at Nate, and so the mind's just abbreviating his name. What is his first words? First recorded words in the Bible. He says, "Rabbi, you are the Son of God. You are the King of Israel." That was within the first minute of meeting Christ. Absolute statement of faith. And many of the others had similar statements. Christ responded, said, "I saw you under the fig tree." Remember, faith is the assurance of hope, right? Things not seen. And a rewarder, he diligently rewards in response. Christ essentially gives that response here. He says, "And he said to him, most assuredly, I say to you, hereafter you shall see heaven open and the angels of God ascending and descending upon the Son of Man." I'll give an analogy here to Matthew 14. Deals with a compound movement called a deadlift. For those of you not familiar with the term, it is called a deadlift. This is where there is weight placed on the ground, straight on the ground, usually being held on a barbell of some sort, and you try to lift it straight up using the posterior or the backside muscles, straight up off the ground to about hip level. It's one of the best movements for strength. It's also something that you have to train for. So let's take a hypothetical. Let's say 400 pounds. If you were to try to lift 400 pounds with zero training, what would you think would happen? Nothing. You would not be able to generate enough force to overcome gravity and the weight on the ground. It would take some training, wouldn't it? Lots of training. Lots and lots of training. And that was the case here with the disciples. They had some faith If you were to look at a strength chart and chart both Christ and the disciples, Christ is way up here in the corner, and the disciples are this tiny dot in the bottom quadrant. But they had some faith, and they were being trained because they were going to need it for their journey. Just like we need faith for our journey. Because Christ said later on, didn't he? Truly, truly, I say to you, whoever believes in me will also do the works that I do. Applies to all of us. Will do the works that I do. And greater work than these will they do because I am going to the Father. They needed training. The muscle of faith had to be strengthened in each of them in order to do the work that was set before them. That was set before all of us. I want to give some important context about muscles in the human body. Just some context, some of the things that I'm going to say. There are 600 muscles in the human body. Pretty outstanding number when you think about it. 600 muscles in the human body. They're broken up into three primary categories: skeletal, smooth, and cardiac. Skeletal tissue is tissue that is attached through tendons to our bones that allow us for movement. Generally speaking, skeletal muscles are grouped in opposing pairs, such as our biceps and our triceps. Skeletal muscles are under our conscious control, meaning we control them knowingly. If you have ever lifted a weight inside of a gym, personal trainer will have told you, focus on the mind-muscle connection. You make a movement. Focus between that movement going from here to your arm and back and forth, the eccentric and concentric motions. Second category, smooth muscle. Second category, smooth muscle is involuntarily moved. It's part of the digestive tract, blood vessels, certain other muscles within the body. We have no conscious control of these muscles. We can just influence them. Third category, like smooth muscle, is cardiac muscle. Again, it's involuntary. I'm very thankful for that. Imagine trying to consciously beat your heart 60 to 70 times every minute of every day of your life. That would be something sustainable. All three muscle groups are comprised of slow and fast-twitch elastic fibers that are bundled together in a thin, transparent membrane called a paramecium. There will be a biology quiz at the end of the sermon. Actually, the fellow with the master's in education is coming on after me, so I'll let him give the quiz. But for this purpose of this message, I want to draw the comparison of faith being like a spiritual muscle to that of skeletal muscle, not smooth or cardiac. We want to focus on skeletal muscle, the muscle responsible for movement, and that requires conscious control. Faith requires conscious control. So I want to give some additional information. To grow skeletal muscle, we have to apply a theory called progressive overload. What is that? It is where we take stress and we apply it to the muscle over a period of time. This causes damage to the muscle, which is then flushed with protein and hormones and causes that muscle, like this cable, to grow back larger and stronger. The more and more you do this, the stronger you get, the stronger the muscle. When you apply pressure and tension over time, it allows the muscle to grow stronger. We'll see the same thing with faith. So take you back to the two questions. How strong is your faith? And are you growing faith as if it were a spiritual muscle? And we'll address question number one. How strong is your faith? Turn over to Luke 18. Luke 18. And I want to take a quick look at a parable that Christ gives in the chapter. Luke 18. We'll begin reading in verse 1. It's a short parable, but has a ton to say. Then he, Christ, spoke a parable to them, that men always ought to pray and not lose heart, saying there was in a certain city a judge who did not fear God nor regard man. There was a widow in that city, and she came to him saying, get justice for me from my adversary. And he would not for a while. But afterward he said within himself, though I do not fear God nor regard man, yet because this widow troubles me, I will avenge her, lest her by continually coming she weary me out. She keeps on coming to me over and over and over again. The Lord said, hear what the unjust judge said. And shall God not avenge his own elect who cry out day and night to him, though he bears long with them? I tell you that he will avenge them speedily. Nevertheless, when the Son of Man comes, will he really find faith on the earth? Will he really find faith on the earth? Sort of an iconic statement. Hone in on a few things here. Christ tells the intent, the lesson that he wants them to learn right out of the gate. He says men always ought to pray and not lose heart, to not lose faith. Why? Well, he gives an example, doesn't he? Trials are going to come. They're assured. We know that. We suffer through them. Where do we go when we need help? Do we take them to God the Father? Or do we try to handle them ourselves? Are we persistent in our request? That's how Christ kicks it off. Barclay's Daily Study Bible makes the following note that I think was insightful. Talking about the judge, I won't read the whole quote. It just says that judges were one of the paid magistrates appointed either by Herod or the Romans. Such judges were notorious. Popularly, they were called Danaia Gezaloth, which means robber judges. So here is this persistent widow, has no way to pay for justice, except the strength of her character and her faith to seek it. She keeps coming to this robber judge and persistently demanding justice, not once, not just twice or three times, until she wore him out. And Christ then contrasts that, doesn't he? He says, okay, if you are the elect, God's chosen people, do you persistently come to my throne room and present your offering? Is God like a robber judge? Will he perform justice or delay a response? Absolutely not, right? It says, I will avenge them speedily. And then he gives that question, that big animal question. Will he find earth, or find earth? Will he find faith on the earth? That's where the question becomes important, doesn't it? Would God's elect continue to be persistent in their faith, or would it wilt? Is our faith strong and persistent? It's an individual question we have to answer. Or has it become sort of wimpy? I'm reminded of a commercial from when I was a little kid. It was a garbage bag commercial from Hefty. And I would run around the house quoting lines from this commercial. It's a Hefty garbage bag commercial. And the narrator, I had to go back and find out what she actually said because I only really remember two words from it. It begins by saying, what will you rely on? Something wimpy or something hefty? And then it would show the garbage bag, the wimpy one, and go, wimpy, wimpy, wimpy. And, you know, you put the trash in there, and it would immediately fall right out. And then it would go, hefty, hefty, hefty. And the bag would hold. And I would go running around the house saying that, wimpy, 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 hefty, hefty, hefty. But that's kind of the question, isn't it? Is your faith strong and persistent, or is it sort of wimpy? What does James 1:2 say? Does it say, count it all sorrow? My brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, knowing that your faith is wimpy and letting your wimpiness have its full effect, that you may be imperfect and incomplete, lacking in everything. Is that what it says? Well, no, obviously not. It says, count it all joy, my brothers, when you meet trials of various kinds, for you know that the testing of your faith produces steadfastness. And let your steadfastness have its full effect, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking in nothing. It literally says, in the testing of your faith, you will produce more faith to meet the trial. If you are persistent, letting the strength of your faith embolden you, it will allow you to become perfect and complete. It will make you stronger. I mean, Christ asked the question at the end, will I find faith? Well, big picture answer is yes, he will find faith when he comes to the earth. How do we know that? Well, we know that the commission to the church will be fulfilled. God's church will exist when he comes to the earth. It's not a big animal question in that sense. It makes it an individual question. Will I have persistent, strong faith, the ability to withstand trials, because we know trials are coming, we experience them, or are we constantly folding under pressure, wilting? From it. One of the things that I've personally fallen in love with over the past 2 to 3 years, as I've tried to make improvements myself, is looking at what we call a symmetric strength score. Now, what is a symmetric strength score? It's where we take certain movements and we place them into a calculator. So I say, for the deadlift, I can do X amount of weight. For the bench, I can do X amount of weight. For the bent over row, I can do X amount of weight. I put all of these repetitions in there, and I click calculate. What it does is it shoots me back a score, and it shows me my body, theoretically, and it says, here's where you're strong at. Here is where you're proficient at. And then it shows you in a lighter color the muscles that you are not as proficient at. It allows me the opportunity to see where my weaknesses are, and to improve upon them. You look at Chris Bumstead, we obviously won't put the picture back up. It's hard to look at him and say, well, he's got any physical weaknesses. He looks fantastic. And you know, first thing he'll tell you is like, well, I have to bring up my biceps and my back. Those are the weaknesses that I have on my physique. In terms of our faith, can we point to elements within our character that are stronger or weaker in other areas? I'm proficient in one area, intermediate in another. Peter was bold, but consistency wasn't his strength, wasn't it? It was something that he had to work towards. You can see from the gospel message and from Acts that consistency became an important part of his character. It was something that had to be developed. There are going to be trials where our strength of faith powers right through it. And there are going to be other times where we are not as proficient. It's true with love. It's true with peace. It's true with kindness, mercy, humility, and all the godly attributes. We have strengths and weaknesses, certain parts of our faith that are stronger than others. Are we focusing on that, taking stock, finding out where we need to make improvements? Are we going to show persistence in that journey, in building the spiritual body. This brings me to question number two. Question number two. Are we developing faith as if it were a spiritual muscle? I mentioned earlier how muscle was developed. We put it under tension. Damage occurs. Protein and hormones flush it, causes it to grow back stronger and larger. How do we do this spiritually? Well, trials is obviously one way which we've covered. I'm very thankful trials are not the only way we have to learn faith. But trials are an important way to learn and strengthen our faith. We looked at the parable. We looked at what we saw there in Matthew. We looked at James. Trials overcome by faith, which in turn causes more faith to grow. That's one way. We've covered that. What's another way? Well, what about prayer? Luke 18 says the first thing. Men ought to pray and not lose heart. Don't lose faith. Through prayer, we are relying on God's strengths and abilities. If it is your will, not ours, correct? We cede control. That doesn't come naturally to us. That's something that we have to build up. We know that God can and will and does provide. Let's take a look at that in Psalm 34. Psalm 34. We'll pick up in verse 4. We won't look at the entirety of the psalm. But let's take a look. King David wrote the following. Psalm 34, verse 4. I sought the Lord, and he answered me and delivered me from all my fears. Those who look to him are radiant, and their faces shall never be ashamed. The poor man cried, and the Lord heard him and saved him out of all of his troubles. The angel of the Lord encamps around those who fear him and delivers them. O taste and see that the Lord is good. Blessed is the man who takes refuge in him. O fear the Lord, you his saints, for those who fear him have no lack. The young lions suffer want and hunger, but those who seek the Lord lack no good thing. We'll stop there. We won't look at the entirety of the psalm. But David puts a tremendous emphasis throughout the psalm that we are to seek God and that we are provided for by God. In order to grow in faith, we have to walk to the altar. We have to get down on our hands and our knees, and we have to pray. One of the things that we will often hear in sermons is that if you lack faith, pray for more faith. The act, just the act of it itself, is a demonstration, an exercise of faith. The more emphasis we place on it, the easier it becomes, doesn't it? Something I'm trying to get Kalise to learn. Transitioned about a month ago from me saying the nightly prayer to her saying it. And she'll say to me, well, Dad, I don't know what to pray about. Well, pray about your blessings. That's a good one to start with. Pray about those that are sick and suffering. Pray about overcoming your trials. Overcoming your fears. She doesn't want to have good or bad dreams at night. Well, pray about that. That's something that she has to learn to do. That's a spiritual muscle she has to grow, that we all have to grow. Now, she has to learn the answer is sometimes no. We're working on that one physically, aren't we? It's something we all have to learn. So prayer is another way. What about obedience? What about fasting? Obedience and fasting, they don't come naturally, do they? I know for me, fasting is probably one of the least natural things I can possibly do. If I want to get better, I have to exercise faith. It's like the age-old question, if I want bigger biceps, how do I get them? I exercise the bicep. I want to get better at obedience, I practice obedience. I want to get better at fasting, I practice fasting. More tangible. I want to get better at not lying. Not saying this is a problem that I currently struggle with, but just saying in general, if I want to get better at not lying, what do? I practice telling the truth. I want to learn to subsist on the Word of God. How do I do that? I read more. I take it more in. I don't want to hold grudges. I learned mercy and forgiveness. They're all exercises of faith. Practicing them allows you to grow stronger in them. Take it a step further. What about godly love? Godly love doesn't come natural. Neither does his peace, his mercy, his kindness, and compassion. Yet they're all attributes of our character that have to be present. The Bible places tremendous emphasis on that, doesn't it? Turn over to Matthew 5. Matthew 5. Faith is a key ingredient. This is what causes the locomotion, like skeletal muscle does. Matthew 5, verse 2. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. How can you be poor in spirit if you're not exercising faith? Putting your trust in God, knowing that he has the riches and you have nothing. How can you mourn? How can you be meek or hunger and thirst for righteousness? All of those things there in Matthew 5. We're not going to read it, but just put emphasis on it. How can we do any of those things without practicing any of those things? If you want to grow the spiritual muscle of faith, it takes practicing all of the components that Christ lays out in the Bible, in the gospel message. It's how we get stronger at them. We'll go to James 2. James 2. I'm doing this on the fly. So it should be right at the beginning. I didn't write it down in my notes. Otherwise, I should have, but I didn't. James 2. So what does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save them? Can you have muscles and do nothing with them? Absolutely. Is that what is required? No, it's to do something with them. What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? And it goes on to say, if a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and no one of you says to them, depart in peace and be warmed and filled, but you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? What does it profit you if you do not exercise your faith and fulfill the common requirements? Thus also by faith itself it does not have works. It's dead. Those muscles are for show. They do nothing. But someone will say, you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works and I will show you my faith by my works. You believe that there is one God, you do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, O foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered Isaac, his son, on the altar? You think about that offering. How many times did Abraham practice offering to God to the point that it became second nature to him? Very hard thing he did, and yet he did it because he had faith. It was something he practiced. In order to grow in faith, faith has to be exercised in our daily lives. It can be grown through prayer, through obedience, through fasting, through the application of Christ's teachings in our interactions with others. Here's two important tips. If there is no discomfort, there is no growth. If there is no discomfort, there is no growth. Faith, righteousness, God's character does not come naturally to us. It pushes us out of our boundaries. If there is no discomfort, we can expect zero growth in our faith. We have to push the boundaries of our believed abilities to grow in them. Second tip, muscles are metabolically active. What I mean by this is that the more muscle you build, the more energy is required. What does this mean spiritually? The more amount of faith you build requires more investment on your part to build and maintain that faith. In order to keep your level of faith. Because again, it's not static. What we put in determines our performance. Put in junk, expect junk results. Put in good effort, expect good effort. Are you treating your faith as if it were a spiritual muscle? It's something that we need to be mindful of. Something that we have to grow daily. In conclusion, we won't put it back up on the screen. We won't put the pictures. Chris Bumstead or Ronnie Coleman or Romario Dos Santos Alves. They were growing a physical body. Impressive. But as we know, Scripture tells us that while there is virtue in training the body, there is greater virtue both in the present and in the long term in training ourselves spiritually. How strong is your faith? Are you growing it as if it were a spiritual muscle? Because it's required. It's required. We look at the holy days. We know what's coming. We know it's required. I hope you have a good and enjoyable rest of your Sabbath. Hope to see you again maybe next week. If I don't, there'll be a third little child here.